Session number 27237, Reel 10.
Dr. Robert Nowarski, Reel 10. We were talking about your time back with 302 Squadron, but based at Northolt.
Yes.
From February 44 onwards. And I think the next big operation that stands out is D-Day. I don't know whether you were involved in any preparations for D-Day.
Yes, we were involved prior to D-Day itself. We would be escorting, again, bombers that would be bombing through marshalling yards near Pas-de-Calais area, again, you see there. But these would be usually so Boston's and Baltimore's, I think, were the aircraft, American aircraft, or British aircraft, usually Lancasters that would be flying in daytime just to bomb the marshalling yards, really. It was, in fact, for preparation for D-Day, which we didn't know, of course, but it was concentrated on that area there.
Now, what about the day itself?
At the time, from about the beginning of... No, about the middle of April, the squadron was sent to Chailey, which was not far from Lewes in Sussex, and that was a satellite sort of aerodrome of Tangmere, really. Where three squadrons were. So we left Northolt, and about the mid-April, but the mid-April 44. Where we left Northolt for good. And we never came back again to Northolt. So we are flying from there, then again, just as escorts or fighter sweeps or dive bombings, the installations you see. It was a very busy time. And the actual D-Day, we were woken up at about 3 o'clock in the morning on the 6th of June 1944, and we all headed into the briefing room.
What do you remember of the briefing?
That's when they actually told us that the invasion has started, and that we were to patrol a certain area. I think it was the Neptune Beach in Normandy. We do patrol it to as a cover for the embarking, disembarking troops, you see. And it was quite a sight, actually, because we took off at about 4 o'clock, which was after. It was still dark. Nearly dark, and the sight was quite incredible, actually, because now you could see armada of ships of different sizes and shapes, all steaming towards France. You see, by that time they were virtually there, but it was all moving like a ribbon of and there were so many of them that you felt that you could almost walk across them. You see, there were so many, so tightly packed. You see, and then of course we went to of the beach, and we allotted the special area. But only that area. You were not to stray to anywhere else, because there were other squadrons patrolling the other bits. You see, there. So you must patrol the beaches there. Which actually was, as it happened, was quite superfluous, because there was no way that enemy aircraft could have attacked it anyway, and the weather was not very good, actually.
So there were no German aircraft at
there
all?
There were no German aircraft at all. No, 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 no.
Now, what could you see? They
just couldn't get through, you see, really. Or they knew they wouldn't be able to get through. And I think it was also a surprise, you see, as far as they were concerned. And also the weather wasn't very good for any aircraft to come in anyway, because they couldn't see anything. There was no, if the cloud base was at about 2,500 feet or so, and it was a total cover. There was no sort of breaks anywhere.
Now, what could you see as how long would you spend on each mission?
They were quite longish missions, because you would spend about 2.5 hours. On the actual patrolling, you see, we then went back again and refueled and went back again to again in the afternoon. By
now, on the first one, what could you see of the actual landing? I presume they were actually.
Oh, you saw the troop car, yes, and the chaps walking up the sort of halfway submerged. Onto the beach, you see, and trying to get there. There was no, and also the beach or the gun emplacements actually that were on just I suppose in the hinterland of the beaches, you see, they were being bombarded by from warships, and it was quite a. It was quite a sight because you could see large ships sort of stationed, I suppose, 3 or 4 or 5 miles from the shore, and you could see the salvo going from one side. You see, and the air would actually shake. You see, with the thing. You see, and then when he would then change round and then try. Transcribers from his other side, you see, it was quite a sight actually to see, and then I'd say on the next bit, next in the afternoon again when we flew again as a squadron, you could then see sort of virtually half the channel up to the sort of half of the channel. They had a ribbon of thing going back again, you see there. So there's one ribbon going to France, you see, or to Normandy, and another ribbon of ships going back again to get some more chaps, actually, you see there. And it was quite a sight, actually. It was it's the sort of thing you'll never forget, you see. Unfortunately, there's no, you couldn't take any pictures of it, but there's no, you didn't have a camera in those days, you see. But it would have made
Did anything happen in these sorties? You seem to have been doing it until the 10th, backwards and forwards.
Yes.
With a day off on the 9th when you couldn't fly.
Oh, well, yes, we couldn't fly, so the weather was. But we lived in tents. We were also, eventually, I'm not quite certain actually when it was, but about 10 days, I think, probably after the invasion or thereabouts, we were the first squadron to land in France itself. It was sort of I suppose north east of Bayeux. I think the little place was called Plumptot. I don't remember now actually. Where they actually prepared a landing strip for us.
And what was that landing strip like?
It was long enough for a Spitfire to take off and to land on. The main sort of advantage, we would go on a patrol and patrol the beaches there at the hinterland and then land there to get refueled again and then go on patrol again, you see. So you didn't have to fly all the way back to England to get refueled, you see there.
Now you've got a story about the way the French farmer.
Yes,
reacted.
that was an awful sort of thing, really. I mean, you felt awful actually about this because you felt so elated that just about exactly 4 years after you left France, you were back again. this time as a oh dear. This time as a liberator, you see there, and virtually the first Frenchman that I met after Liandi was the farmer who asked who is going to compensate him for the land that he had to give us to make the room for the for the airstrip. You see there, it's a you really felt like really shooting him. You see, it was really quite a sort of climb down. You see, sort of from the elation that you that sort of the you why
this brought you down to earth.
It's asked, but
it brought you down to earth.
Absolutely, yes, it really was.
Now, what were you doing in this period? But or was it just more of the same?
But it was quite a bit more of the same, yes. We were strafing enemy positions there, flying low. And also, we are also...
Now, what were those missions like, strafing? This is sort of tactical against German troops and guns.
Yes. You always met a lot of opposition there, actually, because they were of course shooting at you to defend themselves. You see, there, and we did sustain quite a number of losses, actually. And again, virtually if you were patrolling the actual hinterland, you would be shot at. That you didn't even know that you were being shot at. You see, it's not because you didn't see it. You see, you were flying very low.
And what were these low-level strafing missions like? Can you give us a sort of picture of them?
Well, as soon as you saw something moving, say a lorry or a tank or whatever, you see, maybe you would attack it. You see, they're usually on, or you could see. you were usually told where to look for the thing exactly, and what to do. And what to strafe, you see there. So if you saw anything there, then you attacked it. You see, with your machine guns and not with your bombs, you know, just with your machine guns.
Was it exciting, or was it?
Not so much exciting. You see, it was. one particular thing, you see, I remember was when. We were sort of in the Le Havre area, and on the way back from a patrol, I saw an MTB, so motor torpedo boat, leaving the thing there, and I've attacked it myself.
An E-boat?
E-boat, yes.
What do you remember of that?
I knew that I probably hit him because you could see my shells exploding sort of very near, and then on my second attack when I hear I must have hit I don't know what I hit but I must have hit his either petrol tanks or his ammunition whatever, because the whole thing absolutely exploded, and I've had it on a. It showed on my picture, you see. I remember that some few weeks afterwards, I saw that particular picture actually in a cinema, an ordinary cinema. You see, where there was the Mouvieton news. I mean, you probably wouldn't remember. You're too young for that. You see, but there was no news on television or anything like that. You see, but the only news in picture that you could see was in the cinema, and usually before your main picture, whatever it was, you see there, they would have the Mouvieton news reel, and actually that picture of my attack was actually on that news, you see, which was quite crisis me, not me, you see, but that's the bloody thing, you see, it was quite a
And it was definitely from your...
Oh, yes. It's a site that you would never forget, you see. You wouldn't forget that kind of site. When you're actually shooting at that ship, you see, and they explode in your thing, and you had to actually avoid it, make sure you weren't hit by the debris sort of flying.
And who would have supplied that to Movietone News? Your station commander?
I don't know who supplied. They would. It must have. Would have been. I suppose the RAF. That supplied pictures like that for.
Now, what else were you
for
doing?
For general release, you see, really, it's not really. But
what other? Right, you were still doing V1 installation.
Oh yes, we're still doing V1. We were doing for all the time actually.
Were you ever successful in actually hitting? Could you tell whether you'd hit them or not?
You couldn't tell actually. That you knew that you should have damaged the damn thing. You see, because you knew that, say, you would have had either a near direct hit or almost a direct hit on the actual target that you were aiming at. At the debriefing. Or after debris, it was like sort of like a cinema show, because you could see what you were actually shooting at and what you were actually aiming at the time the new bombs were released, you see, there. And then they could calculate that the actual bomb would have hit the target, you see, or would have been within, say, 10 yards or 5 yards of the actual bit that you...
Would you fire while you were dive bombing as well?
Yes, you would fire as well, yes.
One thing...
The fire was mainly, I would have thought, you did it in a sort of self-defense to try to silence the attack that was trying to get to shoot at you, you see. You could see the actual... traces leaving the ground, you see. So you would try to hit them, you see.
What were your guns loaded with? Because I'm not quite familiar with. Was it cannon shells?
Yes,
or was it machine gun
bullets? Yes, you had two cannons. You had one in each wing, and two machine guns in each wing. So you had actually four machine guns altogether, and two cannons. You see, at the time that was the armament of a Spitfire 9. You see, at the time.
Were you happy with that firepower?
Oh, yes. It was good.
What were the advantages of cannon and machine gun? I mean,
the cannon actually, 20mm cannon is quite a large thing, and that would explode on impact, you see. Well, as opposed to machine gun, 303 machines, you see, machine guns... they would just make holes, you see.
And why not all cannon, or why not all machine? I mean, why a mixture?
No, it was always a mixture.
Why? When would the machine gun bullets?
Oh no! No, you couldn't fire. You couldn't fire separately.
Fired them together. No, I knew that.
When you press the button, the whole thing would go. Yes, obviously.
No, but why did they mix them? I mean, it seems that superficially, it seems that the cannon would be more damaging. Why would they?
You see, the cannon, you could only take so much. To begin with, you had just 8 machine guns, 4 machine guns in each wing. That was, I'm going back to 40, 41, 42, you see. But from 42 onwards, you then dispensed with 4 machine guns, so you only had 4 machine guns there, and 2 cannons, you see.
And that was better, was it?
Oh, that was better, yeah, that was better, because with the machine guns, all you did, you actually made holes, and not very much else, you see, there. With the cannons, you see, if you hit your target, say, if you hit an aircraft, a bomber, or a fighter, then that was the end of the, that was virtually the end of the fighter, you see. He would get damaged so bad that he would have to, either the pilot could have been killed, or he would have to bail out and forget about it. As opposed to just machine guns where you just made holes in the wings or the engine or so, it's not really.
Now, What about were you still doing bomber escorts when you were based in France?
Yes. We were still doing bomber escorts because they at that time the bombers would be again bombings of concentrations of German troops that knew where they were, or again marshalling yards where they would be sending supplies, you see, to interrupt the supply lines, you see. You would still be doing that, yes. Not quite as much as before. The main constraint at that time was actually strafing the ground strafing, you see, on the thing, and dive bombing for the installations of V1s, you see. And that was just about.
What about the German Air Force? I mean, how much in? I mean, I know they weren't there.
That time, there was virtually no opposition from the German Air Force.
And what about any of the new aircraft? You know, the jet that came along.
Was very much later. That was very much later, and in fact, I've never met any. Actually, I flew Brazil Air, so I've never met any, and there were very few of them actually. But they were very much later.
The German air resistance was gone.
Oh yes, the air resistance was virtually gone. Yes, oh yes, there's no.
Now, what do you remember? What do you remember of the campaign? I mean, what were conditions like for you living on the ground? I mean, you'd used to be going back to a mess, and I presume you still had a mess.
Well, we lived in tents. It was all right. I mean, at that age, you see, it doesn't really matter all that much.
Were you crowded or?
No, you had you usually had your individual tent. You had your individual tent that you lived in. There was only a small, I suppose one seat. you had to dig your own sort of little. We used to call them graves. You see, you dig your own grave where you put your. Foldable little canvas bed, you see there, so that the bed would actually be low. Well, it was, but I suppose 3 feet up, and the bed would be up to, so that you were when you were lying in bed, you were actually level with the ground. That was mainly for if the camp was hit by artillery fire, that you weren't sort of. You weren't hit, you see, there, but you were that at night, you see, that you were actually protected from. I mean, I don't know, everybody did that.
And what about your food?
I mean, the food was right. There would be a bigger tent, you see, which would be the mess. Where you had your breakfast at your and your lunch.
Now, was it like army rations, or were you still getting the better RAF rations?
Oh no, to be quite frank with you, we were just eating what they gave us, you see, and it was all right. The food was all right. So we never complained actually about.
Was it mainly tinned food? Or
I would have thought so. Yes, we didn't eat from tins actually ourselves. No, we are always
central
cooking. It was dished out. Yes, you had your own. Eating utensils, you see, a little that you had to wash and all that, you see. But the food was usually laid out in the mess that you would just get and cooked, you see, by the cooks.
Now, how did the campaign go then? Because you know, there was a big hold up until what, early August, I think.
Yes.
Through June and July.
Yes. Yeah. Now and. It was all virtually the front was more or less stationary for a long time. It was about early August actually when the airlines have broken out, and the Germans started retreating. You see there, and I remember one particular thing where we spent quite a number of sorties, and that was. Strafing the German troops in the Falaise Gap. Now, and
Now, what do you remember of that? Because that I mean, the results of that were horrific.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I wouldn't like to have been sort of a German soldiers in that particular way, because they were actually absolutely pelted down with cannon fire, not only from tanks and anything, but also from the air. You see, with the
now, what could you see as you were strapping?
Well,
were the columns of troops and?
The columns of troops. You see, and transport, and tanks. You see all. You could see them on the roads there, and it was absolute pandemonium, really, as far as they were concerned. You see, there it was really, mind you, it was very, very heavily defended. We lost quite a number of pilots.
So there was a fair amount of anti-aircraft fire.
Oh yes. Well, they had to defend themselves. You see, there was no. It wasn't a sort of, from our point of view, it wasn't a sort of piece of cake. You see, really, it's really.
So it was a tempting target, but a target that defended itself.
Oh yes, yes.
And anything else about the Falaise Gap?
Well, eventually, when it was all over and they went, the Germans were sort of defeated and got wrong. I remember we went once in a little lorry just to inspect, to see what the hinterland was like there. You see, there it was all behind the, and it was really still the, although the road was clear, the sides were littered with bodies of German soldiers. You see, and it was really a terrible sight. There's no.
It upset you then.
But
did it upset you?
Oh yes. It would upset you. Yes. So just see, all right. You were sort of thinking, Christ, that man probably certainly had a mother and father, you see, or a wife or somewhere there, you see. Now you felt for him, you see. So it's just a
common human feeling. You felt a common humanity with him.
Of course, yes. It was really quite sort of when you were helping, you see, that when you were shooting at the tank, you see that you would disable the tank, but you wouldn't actually kill there, you see, anybody, you see. It was a bit different actually when we were meeting German fighters in the air, you see, because then you knew it was either him or you. When there was an aerial combat, you see, that was a different story, because I suppose you felt that he had as much chance as you had, you see. Which
it seemed a fair.
You didn't feel there, you see, and then you almost felt like you were murdering people, really, because of the. You had to do it because there's no. The war had to go on, you see, or whatever.